Matthew chapter 2, I'll begin reading in verse 1. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he that is born king of the Jews? We have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Now drop down to verse 12. And being warned of God in a dream, that they now be the wise men, that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. And when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeareth to Joseph in a dream, saying, Arise, and take the young child and his mother, and flee into Egypt, and be thou there until I bring thee word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night, and departed into Egypt. And was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, Out of Egypt have I called my son. Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceeding wroth, and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem, and in all the coast thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. Now we're going to continue on, go down to verse 19. But when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeareth in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, Arise, and take the young child and his mother, and go into the land of Israel, for they are dead which sought the young child's life. And he arose and took the young child and his mother, and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus did reign in Judea, in the room of his father Herod, he was afraid to go thither, notwithstanding, being warned of God in a dream, he turned aside into the parts of Galilee. Now, as you read these verses, maybe not, but maybe so, maybe there's certain questions come in your mind as you think about, here's this King Herod. But later on in the Bible, it says right there, but when Herod was dead, that's verse 19. But later on in the Bible, you read about King Herod again. Wait a minute. And then you read about him being king there in Jerusalem, but we know, what about Pontius Pilate, the governor? I mean, how did all this work out here? Because there is some lessons, I think, for our own life as we think about this political landscape. Let's back up for a moment. We'll review just a little bit, get our minds thinking along the way it's been for the last couple of lessons. So as we lay this foundation, we're going to remember some of the things we learned. First thing was this. Ready? So now is the time for I'm going to talk and you're going to answer the correct answer back. Ready? Here we go. Now I'm looking for a three-word biblical phrase. Ready? Jesus was born in the fullness of time. Right, I think it was a dead of night. No, fullness of time. Okay? He was born in the fullness of time. And we said this fullness of time that Jesus was born into was an intersection of two things. Okay? We mentioned three, but I said particular two things intersected, not by coincidence, but by God's plan. Okay? God was behind all this. And so two major things intersected when Jesus was born. What was the first thing? What? War and peace. Oh, okay. We'll say history. The Roman Empire, okay? And now that's important because the ministry of Jesus, if it had come earlier or even later, it would have been hard to spread beyond Israel. But because of the Roman peace, the Roman Empire, and in fact, we'll kind of allude to some other things later in the lesson about Rome. But because they established peace, and peace, not because everyone was lovey-dovey and loved each other. Peace was, these are our soldiers. If you don't do what we say, we kill you. And they said, yes, sir. And that's how they established peace. By the way, that works. And it worked for Rome for many years, many centuries. And so, and they established peace between countries so people could travel. They built roads so people could actually not just travel by legal, but travel by have a means of traveling. But also, they brought a common something else. Language. You could go anywhere in the Roman Empire and preach the gospel. And they could understand you because they all understood Koine, common Greek. Okay, so that was one intersection, history. God prepared the world through the Roman Empire. Then he also used something else. What was it? Prophecy. Okay? There was an exact time that Daniel had said. He said that at the end of, anyone remember how many weeks? End of 69 weeks. Correct. Okay? There's a total of 70. The 70th week hasn't happened yet. at the end of 69 weeks of prophecy. Now, a week is seven what? Years. 7 years. Okay, that was a bad question. A prophetical week. Okay, like I said, giving a test is not as easy as it looks. So a prophetical week is 7 years. And so you take 7 times 69, I think that's 483. So 483 years, Daniel had prophesied the Messiah would come. He came right at 483 years. He came right when the Roman Empire had established a Roman peace, including that Middle East area there, and it prepared the world. So it was a perfect time. That's the fullness of time. Okay? Here's why I'm telling you all that. God makes no mistakes. Nothing in your life is by mistake. Nothing's a chance. Nothing just happened. The Lord is involved in every facet of our life. So that's the first thing we learned. The second thing we said is this, and this was just practical kind of as we think about the Bible. Now notice these terms. It is difficult to be absolute about an exact timeline of all events in Jesus' ministry. We can come up with a timeline, because we know his ministry started with the baptism of John. It ended with his crucifixion. I know the resurrection comes up after that, but his particular earthly ministry ended with his crucifixion. And so there's a timeline that way. But you look at Matthew, look at Mark, you look at Luke, you look at John, and some of the events are a little different in each one. Now, then we said this, and this is important. Each event, each gospel account, chose selected events to record, sometimes to a particular audience, to convey something. What were they designed to convey? The gospel. The main point of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John is the gospel message. You can't ever forget that. It's the gospel message. That's what the Lord is concerned about. He's not concerned that our head is real big, we know all these facts, or that we can quote all these things about Jesus' life. He wants us to have a burden for the lost. He wants us to know the gospel message for ourselves to be saved, and they have a desire to reach others. So the Bible tells us that Jesus came in the fullness of time, that these events that occurred in that time then are important. He came in the fullness of time. The events that came in that time are important to understand. Now, we're going to try to transition now into the lesson. We talked previously how the Roman Empire shaped the world. Okay? When the Bible says, in Jesus' time, all the world should be taxed, what was all the world? The Roman Empire. Rome is the world. The world is Rome. That was the mindset of these people. And it just permeated everyone. And so, when you think of the Roman Empire, it shaped the world during its existence. Now, within that, it also shaped, now think about this, it also very much shaped the nation of Israel. See, I think this is the part we forget. Jesus came in human form. We always think of Jesus, okay, he's the Son of God. He came and he did all of his things and he went back to heaven. Well, that's part of it. He is the Son of God and he did do a lot of things, but he chose to come with flesh. He didn't have to come. That was his plan. He became incarnate, enfleshed. He was limited like we are. He was, in this case, weak. I mean, he didn't come and do all he did, and this is a future lesson. He didn't do what he did because he was the Son of God. He did what he did because he was a man filled with the Holy Spirit. That's important to understand. Now, that doesn't mean he wasn't God. It doesn't mean he couldn't have done it, but that's not how he did it. And so Jesus came in this period of time with the Roman Empire in charge, dealing with a nation that was being molded and changed and corrupted by the Roman Empire. So sometimes we think this, well, Lord, do you understand what I'm going through? And the truth is he does, because he went through the same thing we go through. Well, I think also we sometimes look at the political situation that in our own nation and we feel like it's like the Bible doesn't have anything to deal with it, and this is a unique thing. We need there's my Christian life dealing with the Bible, but then I need to also think about my life as a citizen. Let me tell you, those two intersect together in the Bible. And so as we think about this idea about these political issues that occurred in Jesus' lifetime, now, we may be tempted to neglect this part of Jesus' life, because we could say something like this. Who cares about politics? Just teach the Bible. Well, I agree. Politics can be, and we're not going to necessarily talk politics, but politics can be annoying and can be bothersome and fretful and stressful and all that. But there is a Bible teaching that we need to understand as we're dealing with, as human beings, as believers, dealing with the political landscape in our lifetime. We can learn some things from Jesus' reaction to what he went through. So here's what I would say, just kind of why study the political landscape. Okay, number one is this. Our response to political leaders is a part of our spiritual life. In other words, as a believer, there's certain things God expects you. Dealing with, because sometimes we say this, I'm not going to vote, I'm not going to think about it, I'm going to ignore it, I have nothing to do with that. Let me tell you, that is not a biblical response. As believers, we have an obligation to those in power over us. And we'll look at some verses about that later, but enough to say that's one of the reasons why we're studying it. Here's the second reason. Now, I want you to think about this. Jesus' ministry occurred during a time of great political upheaval. That brings us back to Jesus came in the fullness of time. No event occurring in Jesus' lifetime was by accident. And so the Lord particularly put Jesus in that nation of Israel when it was going through great political upheaval. That was on purpose. It was planned that way. Now consider this, if you will. Okay? Jesus has how many disciples? Apostles. 12. Okay? We take out Judas Iscariot, bring in back in the Apostle Paul, we're still at 12. All right? When the last one dies, anyone know who the last one to die? John. Okay, good. By the time the last apostle dies, the city of Jerusalem has been destroyed. Now think what that means. Jesus was ministering to a group in Israel that was the last generation and they didn't know it. Can you imagine the political upheaval that was going on in that country? All kinds of things. We just don't really think about it. But when he was ministering to people, there was all kinds of things going on in these people's lives politically that caused a lot of chaos. But he still ministered to these people, and even his followers had to deal with these things. And so Jesus' ministry occurred during a time of great political upheaval. And then that brings us to the third, which is this. How Jesus responded then is a good example of how we should then respond to our political world. And he didn't come in a time when you say, well, I thought there was Roman peace. There was. But Roman peace didn't mean that everyone got along in it. Okay, let me tell you why there's Roman peace. You know why Jerusalem got destroyed? Because of Roman peace. Because people in Jerusalem said, we're not going to listen to Rome. And Rome came in and wiped out the entire city. Crucified, I don't know how many thousands of them. They said, yeah, you'll listen to us. And so there's great political upheaval, and that can help us, I think, in some of our own dealings when we think about our nation and issues like that. Let me show you some verses here. Go with me to Matthew 24. Now I'm going to have to ask you to be patient with me because it's going to take me a while to develop because the applications come all the way to the end. It'll take me a while, and I'm going to give you a lot of information, but I think if you follow and listen carefully, then you'll understand the importance of these applications when we get to it. Matthew 24 in your Bibles, if you will. Now, this is just to show us about this idea of the political upheaval that Jesus knew about. Look at verse 1. And Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple. Later on, we'll see this as well. But the temple was in a rebuilding process. It took decades to rebuild. It didn't get finished. Now, Jesus most likely was crucified around 30 AD. There's another 30, 35 years that they're going to be rebuilding things. 65 AD, they got it finished. 70 AD, Rome came in and flattened the whole city. Really, they had 5 years of completion before Rome destroyed them. And so they're like, look at this, and look at all we got, and look how. Now, look what Jesus says next. Look at verse 2. And Jesus said to them, see ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. He was talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. He's saying, this isn't what it's about. I'm telling you, this is all going to be wiped out. And they thought, yeah, I know, in 1,000 years, I know, in 500. But Jesus knew it was going to happen very shortly. as far as their lifespan was concerned. Now, when we think about this political landscape, I'm going to give you some information that will help you, I think, in your own Bible study, and maybe help you as you try to put things together biblically about different events in the Bible. There's what we call the four Herods of the Bible. It's a little confusing because these four Herods intersect Jesus and his followers at different times and with different, they have different degrees of power, different authority, different areas of ruling in, but they're all, well, they're all names have Herod, but they're not all called Herod. Okay? You have four Herods, three of them are called Herod, the fourth one is called Agrippa, even though his name is Herod. They had brothers who had the same name. That was kind of interesting. You know, it's like, this is my brother Darren. What was it, my brother what, Daryl? My brother Daryl, my other brother Daryl. We laugh at that. But this was true in this family. In fact, if you study the Herod's family, you swear they're from like West Virginia, Kentucky or something. It is weird. There was a lot of intermarrying between brothers and sisters and nieces and uncles, and it was really a crazy family. But this is the family that ruled, because we look at our leaders and we say, man, what a bunch of crazy people. Who elected these idiots? Well, we did. So you say, who elected these idiots? But you look at, and of course, Herod wasn't elected, but you look at Herod and all that. I mean, they had these leaders who were, they were immoral, they were cruel, they were just wicked people and goofy people. Now, all of them are going to be related in different ways. So even though Rome ruled the world, well, here's what Rome would do. Rome was smart. Rome would conquer the country, and then they would leave some troops there, and then they would say, well, okay, who in your country can we, yeah, you make a good king, you'll be loyal to us, and he'd set them up and make them the king. That's what meant Herod. Herod the Great, the first guy we'll see, he weaseled his way in favor of Rome, and Rome said, okay, we'll make you the king over this. Now, you expect him to be an Israelite, right? He wasn't even Israel. He was an Edomite. Anyone know what an Edomite is? He's not from Jacob. Who's he from? Esau. And Esau and Jacob, those two, they don't get along. And so you think they like King Herod? No. He was Jewish because Edomites had become Jews. That's another long story. But he was Jewish, but he wasn't even Israel. He was an Edomite. But that's who King Herod was. And so Rome came in and they set Herod up as king. And they demanded loyalty, which these Herods were. And then they left the Roman troops there in case there's any question about the loyalty. Now, let me give you some graphics, okay? I've been kind of wordy. I'm going to give you some graphics, and we're going to go into each of these four Herods and use that to understand some things. Ready? I'm going to give you the complex view. Ready? Here's the complex view. Now, And that is somewhat even debated about if that's everything in Herod's family. It starts with Herod the Great. He has multiple wives, multiple sons. He divorced some, killed some, exiled some, brought some back. There is intermarrying from some of these in the lower, marrying to those up in the higher. There is one who had a niece who married an uncle, who had a daughter who married another uncle in the family. I mean, they were all mixed and matching. But that's kind of hard to follow. So we're going to simplify, okay, and make it look like this. The reason I'm telling you that is because if you ever study this, there's a lot of people in the Herod's family we're not going to talk about. All right? So that's the simplified tree. Now you're ready. You're going to be writing. Got your hand ready? All right. Here we go. We're going to start out by looking at Herod the Great, who was only great in that he was powerful, and that was the only thing great about him. Now, this is the Herod of Jesus' birth that we just read about in Matthew 2. Ready? So here we go. Number one, this Herod was a king when Jesus was born. Boy, got that on the head, didn't we? Number two, he was made king by Caesar Augustus. Does that ring a bell? Who was Caesar Augustus? That all the world should be what? Same guy. Okay, so Caesar Augustus, he's the guy who said, Herod, I like you, you're my buddy. And Herod said, well, Augustus, I like you too. And said, okay, here, you be the king now. And so that's what happened there. Now, his kingdom encompassed most of ancient Israel. There's some significance to that, but we're not going to talk a whole lot about it. Let me just show you the map real quickly so you know. Okay? Now, we're going to look at this map multiple times. His was all of the purple, all the orange, and all the yellow, that dark black line. This was the Israel that Jesus was born into. There was a one Jewish king who ruled everything. He was very powerful. This is at Jesus' birth. It changes very quickly. Okay? But this is Herod the Great. That's his Israel that he ruled. Number four. Okay? I mentioned this. He built a lot of structures, including rebuilding the temple, which took decades. That's probably the most notable, biblically speaking, event of Herod the Great is he rebuilt the temple. You up with me? Okay, number five. He was known for his cruelty. You see, how cruel was he? Well, several wives were killed by him. Several sons were killed by him. I think I read where he killed a father-in-law, killed a brother-in-law. He killed anyone who threatened his throne. Anyone know what the most famous act of cruelty? He killed the children, specifically the boys. That's who he's aiming for. So his best-known act of cruelty is slaughtering the young boys in Bethlehem. Now, if you know anything about Herod the Great, what he did, because if you ever read that and you're like, what kind of guy is this? And why would they tolerate him? You know why they tolerate him? Because they had no choice. They didn't like him necessarily, but he did control a lot of land, and they liked that. It kind of gave Israel a little bit of sense of importance. And he helped the people who supported him, and they liked that. But he's a very cruel king. He had no trouble killing people. But if you knew anything about Herod the Great, him killing those boys in Bethlehem was no big deal. Number seven, the last thing about Herod the Great is this. Upon his death, his kingdom was divided up among three of his sons. It wasn't unusual for Rome to do that. They kind of divide and sometimes brought them together. That way Rome was pulling the strings and not anyone else. So his three sons split the land. One son got the purple area, which was Philip. He's kind of the none, not much talked about. He was kind of, they say of all the Herod's family, he was the only one that was decent. He's one who didn't kill you every time he saw you. Okay? So here's Philip. He was a decent guy. This is his other son, Antipas. We'll talk about Herod Antipas. And this is Archelaus, Herod Archelaus. So remember when they're down in Egypt and Archelaus reigned? That's because Herod the Great died. His son Archelaus took over. They said, and Archelaus was known as being as, they said, Herod the Great is cruel. And Archelaus learned well. He was very cruel. That brings us to the next guy, which is Herod Antipas. Okay? These are his four main sons. Philip, we mentioned. Antipas, we mentioned. Archelaus, we mentioned. You notice we didn't mention Aristobulus. Aristobulus was a son until Herod killed him. That was one of the sons Herod killed. Aristobulus said, no, I think I'd like to be the next king. And Herod said, I think you're going to die. And he killed him. But he's on there because actually his offspring, because he had kids before he died, his offspring plays a role later in the family tree. Ready? So we're going to talk about this fellow here. This is the second Herod. So Herod the Great's the first Herod. Herod Antipas, even though that's called Herod Archelaus, but we're just, for the sake of not confusing you too much, this is the second Herod. So Great, and then Antipas, I think is how you say his name. All right? So here's about this Herod. He was a ruler over Galilee and Perea. I showed you that orange area. Now I'm going to pop it up again so you see, because now I showed it to you. So there's Galilee there, and there's Perea. Perea is on the other side of the Jordan River. Anyone know who baptized in the Jordan River other than Jesus? John the Baptist. And right on the border of Jordan River was Herod's kingdom. He picked a bad place to baptize and to preach against. Well, he didn't pick a bad place. I mean, it was the Lord's work. I don't want to remove the Lord from that. But because Herod's kingdom was right next door to where he was baptizing, that was going to create a problem. All right? So let's move on quickly. Number two is this. His brother, Archelaus, the guy we talked about, received Judea. But he was so cruel, he didn't hardly even make it. I don't know if he made it 10 years. And they booted him. We saw that in our text we read earlier, where they heard Archelaus was in charge, and they said, we're going to Galilee. Herod the Great was bad. His son is bad. At least Antipas in the range of bad, he's not as bad as they are, and so that's why they went to Galilee, because Archelaus was known for his cruelty, very cruel. So much so that Rome said, I'm done with it. I mean, you're causing too many trouble. You're out of there, buddy. Now, here is significant, number three. After Archelaus' death, which is kind of how they remove you, Judea was ruled by a Roman governor. Because if you notice, when Jesus was crucified, there was no king in Israel. In fact, what did the people say? We have no king but what? Caesar. There was no king in Israel. Herod was not the king of Israel. There is going to be a Herod, but he's not that part of Judea. And so you have now Rome, when they said, Archelaus, out of here. And they said, now we're going to govern. You guys caused too much trouble. We're going to govern. Here's Pontius Pilate. We don't like you. We're going to take you out of the nice area you're at and put you in this dead area back in Israel. And Pontius Pilate, who hated it, is said that he went there. And he made a statement, I'm going here to die or something like that. And so they shipped him there, and he became the Roman governor. So now you had, at one time, you had a Jewish king ruling when Jesus was born. But during Jesus' ministry, there's going to be a Roman governor over that area. Changes the political spectrum of it. Now, if you're wondering the timeline, think about this. What does Jesus do at 12? Goes to Jerusalem. But he wouldn't go to Judea, that's what Jerusalem was, before. You know, want to know why the difference was? Because Archelaus is no longer the king, the Roman governor's in charge, and now they felt comfortable bringing Jesus back to Jerusalem. All right, so that's kind of gives you a little bit of behind the scenes of that. Good old Herod Antipas is the one we're talking about. And he chose to marry Herodias, who was his niece. And also, because it was his brother, the one who was dead, Aristobulus, it was his daughter, that was Herodias. And then it was also the wife of Philip. Now, here's the problem with Philip. It seems like they had two different brothers named Philip. They didn't make it easy, did they? Now, the first Philip was called Philip I. Guess what we call the other Philip? Philip what? Two, exactly. So there's Philip I, there's Philip II. He had two different wives, he had many wives. One wife, he had a son, he said, hey, let's name him Philip. And then Herod, for whatever reason, had another wife, another son, hey, let's call him Philip. And probably the other was like, I forgot. No, just get out of here. I'll kill you too. Get out of here. And so he had another son named Philip. So one Philip became, is our understanding, one Philip is the king up north. The other Philip had a wife named Herodias, who Antipas took and made his wife. Okay? So it kind of looks like this. Aristobulus had a daughter, Herodias. Herodias ended up marrying another brother. It's our understanding. There's historians a little, they debate this. But the understanding, they most of them think there was another Philip brother. Herodias married that Philip and then divorced that and then married this one. And that's when John the Baptist began preaching about the immorality of all of that. All right, number five. So all this is the political background that's going on around Jesus. Ready? Number five. So this is the Herod that arrested and eventually executed John the Baptist. Okay, so Herod number one, Herod the Great, is at Jesus' birth. Herod number two is the guy who is going to arrest John the Baptist, and have him executed. He's also going to have a role in Jesus' life. Number six, this is the Herod of which Jesus was warned and later stood before to be judged. Go with me to Luke 13. So we're in the second Herod. Herod number one dealt with Jesus' birth. He dies while they're down in Egypt. Herod number two takes over just the northern part of Israel. Doesn't get the whole kingdom. But he's the one who kills John the Baptist and is also going to confront Jesus. Luke 13, look with me in verse 31. Verse 31. The same day there came of the Pharisees saying unto him, certain of the Pharisees saying unto him, get thee out, depart thence, for Herod will kill thee. Okay, now that makes a little more sense if you understand all of this turmoil that's going on throughout the kingdom. in the provinces. He said to them, go ye and tell that fox, behold, I cast out devils, and I do cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I shall be perfected. Nevertheless, and he goes on to tell them what the rest of the message is. And drop down, go to Luke 23. So that's the same Herod, Herod Antipas. Then Luke 23. Look with me in verse 6. When Pilate heard of Galilee, remember, because they said that Jesus is from Galilee. When Pilate, that's the Roman governor, heard of Galilee, that's where Herod Antipas is now, he asked whether the man was Galilean, or the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he said unto Herod, who himself also was at Jerusalem at that time. Herod had come down as a good Jewish person and, you know, make a pretense of religion. And so they said, whoa, wait a minute, you're from Galilee. That's not the Roman province. That's what Herod actually controls up there. And so they sent him to Herod Antipas to have a hearing. If you know the story, Herod asked a couple stupid questions, basically, and then had Jesus mocked, as it were, and I think beaten some, and then sent back to Pontius Pilate. So that's Herod number two. We have time. I think we'll cover it the next two. I think we can do this pretty quickly. Herod number three. Are you ready? Have I totally confused you yet? Not yet? I'm working on it. Give me time. As I'm looking at this, you know one thing I notice? One thing you say about man, man loves man, doesn't he? Herod, Herodias. You even put Herod in the girl's name. Isn't that something? So here is Herod number three. Herod number three we call Herod Agrippa. Herod Agrippa is probably the most powerful of the Herods. Maybe Herod the Great might be equal to him, but he was very powerful. He is the grandson of Herod the Great, but he's not in direct line of number two Herod. He's actually through the guy that Herod killed, to the son of Herod. Isn't that kind of weird? That's the son he killed, and this is his grandson. And so anyways, Herod Agrippa is the brother to Herodias, who married the other Herod. So here's Herod Agrippa. This is Herod number three. Ready? So this would be Herod the Great's grandson. So we covered that. Number two. His friendship with the Roman Emperor Caligula allowed him to take over after Philip's. Philip was a guy in the purple way up north. After that son of Herod died, Herod, Agrippa, the grandson, went to Caligula. It's a long story, but he was good friends with him, and he got Philip, his uncle's kingdom. All right? Now, number three. Let's see how fast I can go through these. Number three is this. Upon Herod Antipas, that's the guy we just studied, he was exiled. He did some stupid stuff, and Rome said, you're out of here, buddy. And so Herod Agrippa got the up north, that purple area. Then he got the middle area, the orange area, because Herod Antipas got kicked out by Rome. And then, number four, okay, when Claudius became emperor, a new emperor takes over, he gave Herod Agrippa the land of Judea. So no longer is it a Roman governor, now we're back to a Jewish king again. Okay, so the first Herod dealt with the birth of Jesus. The second Herod dealt with the death of Jesus and John. This third Herod is the Herod that we read about in the book of Acts, in the beginning of the book of Acts. Okay, this is Herod number three. All right? So this is the Herod. Okay, so he had purple, he had orange, then he gets to yellow, he gets all of it. All right? So this is the Herod that killed James and arrested Peter. This is Herod number three. Go to the book of Acts, Acts chapter 12. Acts chapter 12, verse 1. Now about that time, Herod the king, that's Herod Agrippa, stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church, and he killed James, a brother of John, with a sword. Because he saw it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to take Peter also. Then were the days of unleavened bread. And it continues on about that account, that story. And so Herod Agrippa was a great politician, and he was always trying to win people's favor, and that's why he was doing this, thinking he'd get the Jewish favor by killing these Christians, and then plus he was always trying to hold on to power as well. Number six. Here's an interesting point about him. He died at the height of his power and glory. You're in Acts 12. Go down to verse 20. Okay. Herod the Great had died. Herod Antipas has been kicked out, and he's banished some other, like Siberia-type situation. Now Herod Agrippa, he's at the height of his glory. He is probably one of the most powerful kings in that area. Now, you know, obviously Rome's still in control, but he's very powerful. Look at verse 20. And Herod was highly displeased with them at Tyre and Sidon. But they came with one accord to him, and having made Blastus, the king's chamberlain, their friend, desired peace. Okay, now if you understand who Herod Agrippa is, you understand why they're so concerned. This is a very powerful local king. Because their country was nourished by the king's country. Because he had consolidated power of the whole area. And upon a set day, Herod, arrayed in royal apparel, sat upon his throne and made an oration unto them. And the people gave a shout, saying, "It is the voice of a God and not of a man." He was happy about this. I mean, here's a guy, Herod the Great, Herod Antipas, Herod Agrippa, Herodias. It's all about Herod. And they're saying, "You're like God." And he's soaking it up. He's proud. He's big-headed. He's powerful. But then God intervenes. Look what happens. And immediately the angel of the Lord smote him because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms and gave up the ghost. But, I like this. Look at verse 24. The word of God, what? Grew and multiplied. Anything you get out of this is that politics doesn't stop God. Okay. Politics doesn't stop God. God can do whatever he does regardless of what man is doing. All right, let's go quickly to the last one, and then I'm going to give you the application. Thank you for staying with me, not throwing anything at me so far. Okay, Herod the Great goes down to Herod Antipas, Herod Agrippa. Herod Agrippa had a son. Now watch this, Herod Agrippa number two. Them are their names. Notice his siblings. Those names strike a bell to you? If you know anything about Bible names, those are two ladies who have a role to play here in just a moment. Bernice and Drusilla. I don't want to get into details. It's just kind of something I want to talk about. They were brother and sister. Let's just say this. They were more than brother and sister. Okay? They were considered kind of like husband and wife. There's some bad stuff going on there. Okay, so you have Herod Agrippa number two. That brings us to, give you a couple points, and I'll show you them in the Bible where we're going to talk about them. He was the last of the Herodians, known basically as King Agrippa. He's nowhere near as powerful as his dad. So Herod Great, that's the birth of Jesus. Herod number two, that is the life and death of Jesus. Herod number three is the early church, kills James, arrests Peter. Herod number four is the Herod, actually King Agrippa, who stood before him. Paul. That's the fourth Herod. King Agrippa is the great grandson then of Herod the Great. Number two, he was considered too young to take over upon the death of his father, Herod Agrippa the First. That's why he didn't have all the land. So he basically got that purple area up in the top, Philip's old area, that was given to him. And he gave him a little bit of top of Galilee. But the rest of Galilee and Judea went back to being a Roman province. So here's what happened in Judea. Okay, this is the political landscape. They have a Jewish king, then they have a Roman governor. Then they have a Jewish king, and now again they have a Roman governor. So there's all these loyalties going back and forth, all this manipulating, you know, who do I suck up to? All this is going on behind the scenes. Okay, number four. His sister was married to the Roman governor Felix. Go with me to the book of Acts again, look at chapter 24. Might interest you, might not, but just a little trivia. Acts 24, verse 24. And after certain days, when Felix, that's the Roman governor, 24:24 of Acts, so Felix now is a Roman governor, and after certain days, when Felix came with his wife, who? Drusilla, that's Herod Agrippa number two's sister, which was a Jewish, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. So first, Drusilla, King Agrippa's sister heard him. Okay, and then number five, this is the king before whom Paul stood and witnessed. And that's still in Acts chapter 25 now, down to verse 13. And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice. Now, if you just read this, it just kind of seems like, you know, they're a couple. But what you don't know is actually their brother and sister. And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came into Caesarea to salute Festus. Festus is the new Roman governor again. So remember, King Agrippa only has that area up north. So he's coming down to make nice to the Roman governor. That's what he's doing. He's nowhere near as powerful as his dad was. Okay, you got all that down? And are you still awake? Now, ready? Here's the two words. So what? Right? So what? What does all this mean? Now, one observation we should have from all of this is what we said earlier, that Jesus had as much and as many political issues surrounding his life and ministry as we have. Okay, you can make your own observations from all these things. Okay, but Jesus didn't live in peaceful times. There's all kinds of things. Sometimes we say, you know, Pastor, what is in the hope? I've had people say, why even worry about our nation? I mean, it's going down the tubes. There's nothing we can do. That's not the way you approach it. Okay, that's not the way you approach a nation. You approach a nation is, what does the Lord want us to do? The hope is not in political answer. The hope is in the Lord Jesus Christ. That's always been the hope. When Jesus came to Israel, he didn't point to Rome. He didn't point to Herod. He pointed to the Lord, to the Father. That's who he pointed to. That's always been the answer. Now, much of the opposition to Jesus, this is, again, a little bit to help you, much of the opposition to Jesus was as much political as it was spiritual. Because Jesus wouldn't play nice to their politics. And sometimes we get caught up in the politics of our nation, forgetting it's not about politics, it's about the spiritual aspect. That's what we should be involved in. There's all kinds of politics around us, but we can't get caught up in it. We can vote, we can make our voice known, but we can't get so caught up in the politics we forget really what we're supposed to be about. And there's other verses we can use. I have some references, but for the sake of time, we can talk about that later if you have questions. Now, let me give you an application quickly. Ready? Number one is this. We have a responsibility as believers to be good citizens. We find that in the book of Romans, Romans 13. So we'll start from this point. Romans 13, look at verse 1. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. Talking about now civil powers. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained or set up of God. The authorities that he gives them. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, that authority, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation, judgment. For rulers, now talking about now civil type rulers, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Will thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore, ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due. Custom whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. So he's talking about our response to civil authority. And we say, but look how bad it is today. It's never been good. There's never been a time when believers have lived under civil authority who's had it perfect. It may have been better at other times, maybe worse at other times, but it's never been good because there have always been lost people in charge. And it's like in Jesus' time. But Jesus had to deal with these civil authorities over him like we have to deal with civil authorities. Now, I think we should vote. I think we have a responsibility to vote. I think we should vote. And I think we should vote for those who will lead our nation in a direction that honors the Lord. Whether we win the vote or not is immaterial. We should vote not for the guy who promises a job, not the guy who promises free education, not the guy who promises your free phone, the guy who leads our nation closer to what the Lord wants. That's how we should vote. The economic outcome, all those things, is immaterial. The Lord blesses. And that's what we're looking for, not government handouts, but God's blessing. Now, number two, beware. Now we're going to, the next two make it much more personal. Beware of uniting for political reasons that ultimately hurt the spiritual cause. If any mistake we've made as believers It's been we've had this idea that we can hook up with everyone else just for the sake of electing the right person. And that has hurt us big time. We've lost, really, our light and our salt because of political involvement with the wrong people. Okay, I'm not going to hook up with the Catholics or the Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses just to elect a good president. See, but that would make our voice stronger. That's not my job to make my voice stronger. My job is to do right. The Lord blesses. He doesn't need me to do wrong for Him to bless. Now, here's what happens. When we hook up for political reasons with the wrong crowd, we lose our spiritual power. There's a story in the Bible, and I have the verses, but again, I'm going to just tell you the story for the sake of time here. There's a guy named Jehoshaphat. He was a great king. Jehoshaphat got in his head that I'm going to come over here to Ahab, which is a very wicked king. Jehoshaphat had the southern kingdom of Judah. Ahab had the northern kingdom of Israel. Very wicked king. And he made affinity, basically made a peace treaty with him. Let's get together. Together we'll be strong. Divided we're weak. Together we're strong. Our voice can be heard. We can have power if we come together. But you know what? It was never the Lord's will for the righteous king Jehoshaphat to hook up with the wicked king Ahab. It was wrong. Okay? There is a issue of biblical separation here. Now, you know what became the outcome? You know how kings made peace treaties? One child married the other child. So the son of Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, I think was his name, married the daughter of Ahab, Athaliah, who was very wicked. She was like Jezebel. She was actually Jezebel number two. She, like daughter, like mother, like daughter. She was very wicked. So here comes Athaliah. Hi there, Jehoram. She comes over here and marries Jehoram, and he becomes the next king. You read in the Bible, here's the Jehoshaphat, a man who loved the Lord, a man who was blessed of God, a man who was great, a man who led the nation in spiritual things, dies. Jehoram takes over. You know what it says about him? He was a wicked king. He led the nation in the ways and the sins of Israel. Jehoram, for political expediency, brought spiritual destruction to his nation. That's what we have to be careful of. So, yeah, we ought to vote. Yeah, we ought to make our voice heard. But the idea that we quit soul winning, we quit doing all the things that God wants us to do so we can have a political power, that's what gets us in trouble. So we don't need political power. We need spiritual power. Let the Lord bless. That's how a nation goes forward. Number three, the emphasis of our Christian life and ministry ought to be spiritual change, not political change. Okay, that's the emphasis, spiritual change. Jesus was always focused, again, a bunch of verses, not, if you want them later, I can give them to you later. Jesus was always focused on why he was here and what he was to do. He never, listen, now watch this. Jesus' work never involved the changing of the political leadership of the country. You never saw Jesus with a big billboard saying, down with Herod, down with Herod, down. You know why? Because he's out preaching the gospel. Now watch this. There was a Herod before Jesus was here. Talk about his life on earth, his first coming. There's a Herod before Jesus was here. There's a Herod the entire time Jesus was here. And there was a Herod after Jesus left. But you know what? In his lifetime, there's people saved during Jesus' life. There's a church established. And there's a ministry that went on after him. That's the important thing. The important thing in Jesus' life is not that he changed the political landscape, is he had a spiritual impact. And I understand he's deity, but I'm putting him down in because he's 100% God, man as well. So I'm putting him in the human form there. There was a ministry that went after him, that continued after him. Ultimately, a nation will be changed. Now watch this. Ultimately, a nation will be changed by the changing of hearts, not the changing of laws. So if you think about our country, America will not be changed. This is what some people say. We're going to change America one election at a time. No, we're not. If we're going to change America, it'll be one heart at a time. Okay, I think you ought to vote. I've said it now 6 times in this message, I think, in this Bible study. You ought to vote. You make your voice heard. There's nothing wrong with that. But don't get caught up thinking that politics is the answer for America. It's never been the answer. Let me just tell you this. The politicians know that they can con us. They get us because they say, Well, you know, we're going to be anti-abortion, or if you're on the other side, we're going to be pro-abortion, we're going to be anti-gay marriage, or we're going to be pro-gay marriage. They use cultural issues to pull us in, and then they do what they want anyways. And we're the suckers. So I'm saying vote. Yeah, vote. Know who you're voting for. Vote for the guy who can lead our nation closest to the Lord. But understand this, that the hope of America lies in churches like this throughout our country. People living for the Lord, people testifying of the Lord, people standing for the Lord. That's the hope of our nation. I got a whole another couple paragraphs, but we're just way out of time. Let me give you the last statement. Just say this. Being a part of a Bible-believing church's program will do more to change our nation than attending any political rally. That's the hope. So that's the whole idea. When we look at this political landscape, it's no different than it's ever been. But and the hope has always been the same. Let's focus on what we're here for. Let's do the work of God. Let's accomplish what we need to accomplish.